This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello again, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs with Wells Tech. We're up to episode 493, and we're recording it on April 18th, 2017. And when I say we, I mean me and Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you today?
I am just awesome, just basking in the joy of Easter Sunday. Yes. Did you have a nice Easter worship, Martin?
We did. We went down to see my daughter, my oldest daughter, and son-in-law, and our two grandkids. So we celebrated Easter at their church down in Greenwood, Indiana. Just a beautiful service. Kind of a small home mission type of congregation, which is kind of a nice setting once in a while for Easter. Everybody knows each other. We had a post-Easter meal and got to know some other people. It was a neat experience. How about you?
Well, St. Paul's in New Ulm was just gorgeous. They always build a beautiful open tomb in the altar area, and the children are just fascinated to see the empty tomb, and it was just a really neat experience. They had a beautiful brass choir. I couldn't get over the brass. It was a taste of heaven for sure, and just love singing those Easter hymns and enjoying that joy that we have as Christians that Christ has risen. So yeah. Good day.
Normally, the last couple of years, we had been down to my son, who's in Austin, and they do an outdoor service, which is kind of a unique experience as well. And when you said the tomb that they had set up there at St. Paul's, they had one outdoors, which was kind of neat too.
Wow.
They had steers in the background, though.
So maybe that was even just more like Jerusalem,
maybe,
you know?
Maybe so. Yeah, exactly right. Well, thanks for joining me once again for episode 493 on our march toward 500. This is one of those weeks of the month where we kind of take a break and let our listeners and viewers do the talking for us as we kind of cull through their feedback over the last 4 weeks. We gather it all up and go through some of the more relevant ones. Actually, we take almost anything we can get because they're all actually very good. We look in places like email, Facebook, Pinterest, the Google groups that we have, Digo, et cetera, wherever they're talking to us, whatever channels they're talking on, we bring it all together and we chat a little bit about each one. And we've got a lot to go through today, Sally.
We do, but I think we're starting with my favorite first, and that's an email we received recently from Pastor Rob Gunther. Pastor Gunther serves at Grace in Kenai, Alaska, and he's a frequent contributor to Wells Tech. We're always happy to hear from him, and always neat to learn what he's doing in terms of technology. He's got it going on with technology in the ministry setting, and this week he wrote to us kind of a follow-up on Pastor Steve Daly's interview we did recently about bullet journaling. And what Rob has found is something called Rocket Book. I guess probably the best way to explain it is to show their website. Let me do a quick share of my screen for those that are watching along on the video. Rocket Book is billed as a notebook from the future. And basically, it's a notebook that has QR codes on each page. So you can actually snap a photo of the page with your phone, and depending on how it's marked and the QR code, it'll send it somewhere. Probably easier for me to read what he says. There's a QR code on every page, allows you to scan and instantly digitize when you snap a photo of a page with their app. A check mark by one of seven icons that are printed along the bottom of the page tells it where to go. So you determine if it's going to email or OneNote or Dropbox, whatever you set up and assign those check marks to map to, basically. He says, for him, it's scanned into Evernote, which reads text in photos, so you can search and things within Evernote. And then he says his second thing that he really loves about it, the really cool part, is this just doesn't sound believable to me. You can put the notebook in the microwave with a cup of water, and it erases everything in the book when you use a special Pilot pen, the Frixon pen. and very close relative to my favorite, the G2 pens from Pilot. So you can get colors and all kinds of fun. The notebook cost about $25. He has an example. Let's see if I can switch screens. He has an example, and I closed the one I wanted to really show you of it erased. He also says further down in his email that if you're not interested in spending the money on the notebook and the pens and all those kind of things, you can actually print templates. And he's brought the template into Word and designed a sermon template. And then it has the QR code and everything, and you can still use the boxes along the bottom that you've assigned different meanings. And do it all for free. Of course, your printed pages with their template aren't erasable with the magic cup of water and the microwave effect, but really impressive that you can easily digitize and organize your notes using this Rocket Wave notebook and their templates.
So, nothing a good match wouldn't fix on those self-created templates, I suppose, except not very reusable.
So yeah, we'll have a link in the show notes to iOS and Android apps, and you can check out the Rocket Wave. Let us know if you're using it and what kind of exciting things you erase with water in the microwave.
Just really something smart. Right out of Get Smart or Mission Impossible.
For sure. Yeah.
And I suppose there are, you know, use cases for that beyond just kind of the reusability. It is a pretty expensive notebook, but when you kind of factor the component that you can reuse over and over again, then it gets a little bit cheaper every time you put it in the microwave. So yeah. Very, very interesting. And then maybe there's some sensitive stuff that you'd want to do away with too, but very interesting. Leave it to Rob to find something like that. I don't know about you, Sally, but I'd never heard of anything like that.
I had not heard of it either, but yeah, time keeps marching forward and the future is now. I just can't get over the Rocket Wave notebook.
That's kind of cool, because when we talked to Steve about the bullet journal, I was thinking, well, how can we mix the old with the new, the analog and the digital? And this is kind of a way to do that.
Definitely.
I've mentioned some of those other kinds of notebooks where you need special pens and they're kind of big and clunky. You need a battery and then you can scan it in, but they're not reusable. And, you know, it's just kind of a costly scenario. This seems like might hit a sweet spot there. Thanks for sharing with us, Rob. And the pictures, too, are priceless.
Mm-hmm. Cool stuff. Via email, we also heard from Denny Betcher, who's at St. Luke in Little Chute, Wisconsin, one of our former Final Web students. Hi, Denny. Happy to hear from you. And I called it ye old copyright question. It was a week before Easter. We could almost read it from a Dickens novel or something. But he got called into the church office and got posed the question, we want to live stream our Easter service. And, you know, that's exciting. It's a new way to go with your services, and I think many people are doing it, but it may not be something you can react to quite that quickly because there are copyright issues around live streaming. And so I basically sent Denny to our copyright page over on our Wells Tech Wiki and also to the folks at Christian Copyright Solutions. They have a lot of great downloadable resources that'll bring you up to speed. I got a follow-up question from Denny. What if we just want to live stream and only share it with a few people? Well, yeah, you could do that, but you're still really needing to abide by those same copyright. Live stream is live stream. That's right. So, he specifically said, what if we use Google Hangouts? Well, that's still streaming some video of a service.
It gets a little fuzzy, and there are some provisions for shut-ins, those kinds of things, considered quote-unquote members, but you'd want to be careful and ask the right questions. We probably should throw in James Karlofsky's submission here too, and in the Google Schools group, which we're going to get to a little bit later. He asks or shares a copyright infographic that might be valuable here too. That's the title of the article, Copyright a Little Fuzzy. That's certainly true. So probably something to throw in the pot there as well.
And I got to share my screen because I have 2,000 tabs open, and one of them is Copyright a Little Fuzzy.
Found it. Very good.
And I pinned it on our Wells Tech board because, you know, those infographics are perfect for Pinterest.
They are.
So. So we'll have a link to that in our show notes, and you should be amazed that I picked it out of my 2000 tabs to be able to show you on the fly.
When you get that many tabs, they get a little microscopic, and you kind of see half of the first letter of the title. So I'm proud of you.
So one more infographic related mention, since we're talking about infographics, and that is that our friends over at PictoChart are turning 5 this week, and they are celebrating. So PictoChart is a really easy, free tool to use to create infographics, and they have a more premium level that gives you more designs to start with, but you kind of have a blank slate. You can create whatever you want, and I've used it. I've used it actually most recently for our Wells Tech social media ministry series and created a bunch of infographics there. Really easy to use. They are turning 5, and they're having a big giveaway. They're giving away an iPad and a lot of other stuff. So if you're interested, you can head over to their page and get details and sign up for some freebies they're giving away, and it's all this week. So if you want to be in the drawing, you got to do it this week, folks. And that's over at PictoChart. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes.
It's probably, Sally, something we should think about having just a show on, and maybe we've even featured it before that I'm not remembering, but there are lots of applications for infographics, not just educational, but reporting, just different ways to spruce content up, maybe sometimes otherwise just bulleted text, which is not all that interesting, to spruce things up and make it more readable, more interesting.
And along those lines, our friends in the Facebook group Intersections, Pastor nice James segue, Aderman, yes, actually have an article that they shared called The 7 Different Types of Infographics and When to Use Them. They talk about timelines and data visualization, different things like that, processes, how to do something, comparing things, so kind of a right side, left side infographic, list of things, and maps. You know, one I saw recently that kind of surprised me was not a real tall infographic like the ones I was just showing on the screen, but actually one that was short but conveyed a lot kind of right to left or left to right. Unless you're doing Hebrew, it's usually left to right. That's right. Yeah. And that was actually an infographic, you know, that was just kind of a flow there. And I thought that was a really neat use of an infographic.
It's an interesting concept. And we're seeing this a little bit more in presentation software. We've seen it in things like, what's the one where you've got this big map and you zoom in and zoom out? I forget what its name is.
I do too, now that you've said that.
whatever. But what started me thinking that direction is things like Sway, where one of the default navigations is kind of that, you know, vertical or even horizontal way of moving through content. And it just makes a lot of sense. And it's very natural, I think, probably because of touch interfaces that we have now with things like the iPad and our smartphones, where that's a very natural thing to just tap and drag. So,
is your computer screen a touch screen?
Yes, it is.
My laptop screen is, but my regular big monitor isn't, and I find myself often reaching for it just for that very reason, that it's just a lot more natural for us now to touch and move things that way. So, yep,
absolutely. At the end of the show, I'm going to remember the name of that presentation, because I've created whole presentations in it, just not lately. So
right, and I'm racking my brains as well. Prezi.
That's it. Very.
I got it.
I know it started with a P. I just couldn't come up with
it. It's a P. That's what I was thinking too. Okay, a couple more things from our friends in the Facebook Intersections group. There's an article on church sound and EQ, or equalization, I believe that's what that sounds for. And they're just kind of emphasizing that equalizing your sound can kind of make or break you. So something that you don't necessarily think about.
It's pretty technical, but it is they do give a step-by-step. And anybody who's got any familiarity with your soundboard probably would recognize some of the instructions. But equalization, I think probably all of us would recognize, you know, treble and bass, you know, on your car stereo, whatever. But most soundboards have more control over that. They have the mids and other ways to shape the sound. And the reason that soundboards are important and you should pay attention to them and maybe get a little bit smarter is if you're doing any kind of recording or rebroadcasting or live streaming, that sound is really important. And the shape of your building, the materials in the building can affect any of those highs, lows, you know, mids, whatever. And just by tweaking them a little bit, you can make the sound a lot easier to listen to. So this is it's not a real long article, and I shouldn't scare you off to say that it's super technical, but you know, they do give you a step-by-step of how to figure out what might be that sweet spot for your sound. So take a look at it.
Very good. And then finally, from that intersections group, an article from Concordia Technology Solutions. They're our friends.
I like this one.
They have some really great blog articles and things going on now. And recently they blogged how to improve your church announcements. And, you know, my brain went straight to like bulletin announcements. This is more, it's kind of all encompassing. It's people making announcements during church. And, you know, the supporting communication, the ripple communication that goes along with that, and talks about timing of announcements and all kinds of different things associated.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good things to think about there. You know, even like you mentioned, when you do the announcements, do you do it before service, after? Do you find some place in the middle? What do you announce? If you announce everything, does anybody hear anything? Nothing becomes important. Who does the announcements? Are they written, or do they find a home someplace else as well, using video screens? All kinds of good things to think about. You know, this is something that every church, or almost all every church that I've ever been in, has to deal with and make some decisions on. So don't just assume that because you've always done it a certain way, that's the best way to do it. This is a good thought-provoking article about, you know, those church announcements, which are very important, especially if you're talking about ministries that you're trying to promote and get people involved with doing the work of the Lord.
And those key points, the takeaways, the things you want people to do, the actions you want them to make, that should be kind of your starting point of determining all of this. And that comes out in the article as well, being very focused about what your message is and what you help people to do with it. So exactly. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. All right.
I see another infographic in our future.
How exciting. Two infographics in one show. Another pin on Pinterest, this one related to bullet journaling, and it's called How to Start a Bullet Journal from the Planner Hack, and it talks about all those different types of things that make up a bullet journal that Pastor Daly so clearly shared with us when he was discussing bullet journaling. It has kind of some visual to go along with it of what you might structure your bullet journal to look like, and really great starting point, very simple explanation and thing to go along with it. So have you started your bullet journal yet, Martin?
I have done some research.
How about that?
I think I understand the concept, but okay. I've not bought in yet. But
no paper in your near future, huh?
I don't know. So we move on to Google Groups, or not Google Groups, what do we call these? Google Communities, they call them, and there's a couple of active ones, especially the Google Schools community, and a lot of different people, mostly asking questions, which is a great use for those areas. It's not just somebody writing a complete article on something they found or, you know, researched. It's people asking simple questions. The first one, as an example, Gail Potratz, many people will remember Gail as a regular contributor to our show, a semi-regular classroom technology correspondent. She's still very active in her work and in the technology space, asking if anyone uses Chrome with a TV screen to do announcements in school.
Yep, and she got a lot of response on this one. Really interesting to read about. It seems like digital signage has come a long way in a short time, and everybody's doing it, I believe. And there were many great examples. Joshua Shanek shared a picture from Kettle Moraine and explained how they use a Google slideshow integrated with Google's, let's see what it's called, digital signage. It's a app in the store, Chrome Sign Builder, you can use. And as part of that, then they use the bottom part of their sign is a Google Slideshow. And what I thought was especially interesting with what Joshua said was that they may have 20 or 30 or 50 slides in there that they're working on, but the way they have it timed out, it only shows like the first five or six, each one for 10 seconds for a total of 1 minute, and then it loops back to the beginning. And so if they're making changes to some and still developing them, that never shows. You never see one that's halfway done because they only move them up to the top five at the time that they're completed and ready to display them. So I thought that was really interesting how they've worked out the timing for those, and just great experience that people share in the group for sure.
Absolutely.
Next up, we had one from Jared Matthews, and he says he was looking for some help switching our school from round cube webmail to Gmail. And Jason Schmidt piped in and sent him a link to G Suite Quick Fixes Help, how to set up Gmail for my domain. So it's kind of a step-by-step process, talking all about locating and updating MX records and all kinds of geeky stuff like that. But I think they walk you right through that process. So we'll definitely share that link in the show notes.
Matt Notling was next, and he touched on a topic I think we maybe talked about with Rachel a month ago. I'm talking about map testing. Has anyone made use of adding a student's map testing scores to Khan Academy? And there were some good responses there, too.
Yeah, it sounds like people are really happy with the results of that. And someone even said that they're using, what did he call it, Eureka Math, and that ties into it as well. So he says homework checking keeps getting easier to correct, helping you out. I found a link to map recommended practice on the Khan Academy website. We can throw that link in the show notes as well.
Very good. Derek Rabers was the last one we'll talk about here. He's asking about any good free science textbooks out there.
And a couple that were mentioned were the CK through 12 curriculum that's available. We've talked about that many times on the show. And also Curriki, CURRIKI.org, and the resources they have there. Jason Schmidt also made mention that there's a open initiative in the government, in the federal government, in the technology office, and you can read some of the background and what they're trying to accomplish with that initiative as well. So good stuff out there.
This is a very interesting space, Sally, as far as I can tell, not being a true educator, but the ability to kind of custom make a curriculum through these digital resources that are out there. It's almost overwhelming. It seems like there are so many options and very low cost options, which is very good news for our schools if you can find the right mix and put these together. I know a lot of school districts, especially in the public sector, are granting teachers some time off to do their own even. So everybody wins there as well.
Yeah, and I can remember, a few years ago being in school myself, and, you know, the teachers always do have particular insights or you know, topics that they want to be sure to work in. They would bring in special series and things like that, and so this is just giving them more and more of those kind of resources so they can truly teach what the students need to learn. So good stuff.
We mentioned a couple of Google communities. The other one, not quite as active, but I find very interesting, is the Office 365 group, and Perry Lund is always good for a great tip there. And let me see if I can pull it up here, too. He talked about, I got the wrong browser logged in, a new contact at NCCE, making a video on Office Lens, which I think he brought up maybe a couple weeks back or maybe in our last community feedback, which is that ability to use your smartphone, get stuff into OneNote.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, Perry was recently at a conference, and apparently he got to meet the producer behind this. I want to say his name is like Coffee Gorilla or something crazy like that, is the guy that made the video. But he's showing how he scans all his notes, his business cards, and everything with Office Lens, and it goes right into OneNote. So yeah, pretty convenient.
Very, very cool tool. It does a lot. It doesn't just take a picture, but it kind of predicts or allows you to select what kind of image it is that you're taking, whether it's a whiteboard or a document or just a regular image. And then it works its magic and gets it into OneNote for you. I think that just leaves Digo, right, Sally?
That's right. And we heard from Pastor Emil Burgess. He tagged an article from blogger Tim Chalice. We've talked about him on the podcast several times. This one is actually kind of a sad topic, 10 ugly numbers describing pornography use in 2017. And probably a good read for just about everyone to be aware of the global and huge impact that pornography is having in the world. And it says here 4.6 billion hours of pornography on just one website, the biggest porn site in the world during 2016, and that children are exposed by age 11, 93% of boys and 62% are exposed to internet-based pornography during their adolescent years. And the statistics just get more and more sad, unfortunately, as you read the article. But the good news is we have a great resource that we can point people to, developed by a Wells group from our special ministries office, and it's called Conquerors Through Christ. And they have tons of great resources around rejecting, resisting, and recovering from pornography exposure and addiction. So definitely check out the conquerorsthroughchrist.net website for those resources.
Very good. So thanks everybody for contributing to the show. We really appreciate it. Keep it coming. If you'd like to contribute and haven't done so, there's really no shortage of ways to do that, whether it be Facebook or Twitter or Digo or Pinterest. All those are listed on our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. Just take a look across the top navigation there, and you kind of see all the ways that you can connect with us. Pick whichever works for you, but please pick something and then share. That's kind of what this show is all about.
All right, we have a little news and tech to plop into the show at this point. And this week I was reading an article about Microsoft's rumored CloudBook and how it's going to be a competitor with the Chromebook. Have you heard of the CloudBook, Martin?
I have not. I'm very interested, intrigued, though.
They say that the rumor is that they're going to unveil it in a couple of weeks at an education conference, and that it's going to run a scaled-back version of Windows 10. They're calling it Windows Cloud, and be able to run things from the Microsoft App Store, the store that comes along with Windows 10. Machines running it will only be able to run apps downloaded through that Windows Store. I think they do have some kind of a function where you can switch that to do some other things as well. So they've been in the high end of this market with their Surface and Surface Book. And now this is a low-end computer that is rumored to come to really compete against the Chromebook. So stay tuned. We may be in for a new competitor in cloud-based computing.
Very good. Should we go down to Wells now, or you want to go to the countdown to episode 500 segment, Sally?
Oh, did I skip right over that, didn't I?
How can we miss our retrospective look at the at Wells Tech through the ages? Every show until we hit 500, we're focusing on a specific year. We're up to year three, which was 2010, episodes 113 to 164. And kind of fun just to take a look at our picks of that year. Sally, how'd you do on your picks?
I think I did pretty good. Only one of them is now defunct, but there's a great replacement. So my top three picks of the year were MailChimp, which is still going strong and giving us the ability to have free e-news in a very professional manner. Google Calendar, couldn't live without my Google Calendar keeping me straight on all the different things going on in my life and sharing in so many different ways. And then my number one pick of 2010 was Picnic. And sadly, Picnic did shutter. It was actually bought by Google, and it's now a lot of the functionality is incorporated in their Google Photos and the editing capabilities there. But it didn't take long for Picnic's replacement to be launched, and that was PicMonkey. And I'm still a huge PicMonkey fan. So I think I did pretty good in 2010. How about you?
Good on you, Sally. Yep. I did okay. My top two are fine. KeepVid was my third pick, if we've got these in the right order. Uh-huh. KeepVid was a way to download YouTube videos, and I don't think it actually still is a lie, but there are other alternatives. I've mentioned YouTube Red in the past. That allows you to download videos, although not on your computer. It'll download to a device along with pushing out all the ads that you might see. So with YouTube Red, you don't have that. That's $9.99 a month. And that's one thing that I've kind of changed over time since I've subscribed to YouTube Red is the practice of downloading them to an iPad and actually using the iPad if I'm doing a presentation for playing videos. So I can kind of keep that separate, and that seems to work pretty well. Another tool I use that is very good on the Mac and Windows is ClipGrab. I think that's been a pick of mine in the past as well. My other two picks, though, are still going strong. LastPass is something that I use every day and something that all of our IT staff here in the Senate office uses every day. I use it for personal stuff as well. And then YouVersion was my top pick back then. I don't know if it was brand new then, but it was just getting started. Mm-hmm. Came out of lifechurch.tv and is still the application I recommend to people for reading Bible, sharing Bible verses, reading plans, those kinds of things. So
very good. Right too. I'd say 2010 had a big impact on technology and ministry in another way, and that is, you could see from looking back at that year, that was the year we first started about talking about churches having Facebook pages.
Right.
So that was the time when I remember it was brand new, and we were gathering people that were doing it, and we had a list of about five or six of them in the Wells Tech Wiki because it was so new. Not many people had it. People are kind of cautious of going there, and now I guess we'd be probably hard-pressed to find a church that doesn't have a Facebook page and is using that.
A piece of their ministry on it. Mm-hmm. Sure.
So only 7 short years ago that was brand new.
Amazing. Now we can go to Wells now. There's things happening in our Wells circles, Sally, most of them education related.
Right. We wanted to take a minute and make mention that MLC and WLS, Martin Luther College, Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary, both have offerings for the summer available for registration. So we'll have links in our show notes to the MLC summer courses, many of them available online, some of them available on campus, as well as on location, where they're coming out to California, to Florida, to Boise, Idaho, Illinois, Maryland, all over the country with some satellite courses this summer from various professors. So like I said, come to New Ulm, have a class online or in your own location through MLC. Check out all the offerings. And then WLS also has summer quarter online with a list of courses available online for summer quarter, as well as summer quarter in person at the seminary, and a bit longer list of courses which are being offered this summer at SEM. And interestingly enough, they have a great logos pricing for seminary students that they're able to pass along to those enrolled in their continuing ed classes as well. So just one of the many benefits of taking a class at WLS this summer. So check out those links. We'll have them in the show notes.
Very good. All right. I think we can now move on to our picks of the week.
And I guess I'm up first, and my pick of the week is actually a blog post from Trello that I was reading last week. I had a little bit of personal interest there. It's called 6 Rules to Live By When You Work in an Office but Have Remote Team Members.
You know, when I read that, because I subscribed to that blog too, I thought, I wonder if Sally's going to latch on to that and pick that.
So, imagine that. Yeah. And I happen to be part of a remote team. And so this was interesting for me to read. It does have some different perspective, and I could relate to a lot of the things that they were saying here. I think that we can also relate to these issues as we move forward in this day and age. even in a church and school setting. I could see different scenarios where people may be working from their home, working on church projects, working with volunteers and things. Congregations that have members spread pretty widely, or congregations that have confirmands that can't always get in for a confirmation class or whatever it may be. All these different things just add a slightly different flavor to your communication, your work that you need to accomplish. And one of the main things I think the focus of the article has is just being diligent and engaging everyone kind of on an equal platform. So if you're going to do video conferencing for your confirmands, then everyone should be doing video conferencing. You should all be having that same experience so that you can all get through it together and learn together on an equal playing field. And I think there are other tips here that you can take away from this. Maybe your teachers are spread out over the summer attending conferences or doing traveling or whatever it may be. And you just need to be more sensitive as you have team members working remotely. Takes effort for the remote team members, takes effort for the people in the office, but it also is definitely a trend in today's workforce that you can be aware of.
Nice pick.
Mm-hmm.
My pick, let me see if I can quickly bring this up, is a blog I ran across just the other day that I was really surprised that I didn't have this on my radar before. It has to do with Microsoft products. It's called 1 Minute Office Magic. And these are short little blog posts that pick a Microsoft tool, usually in the Office suite, Outlook, Excel, Word, PowerPoint, and give a little very helpful tip that you probably were frustrated by at some point if you are a Microsoft Office user. And I think it's probably unavoidable that most people do have to deal with Office files. And this little blog, 1 Minute Office Magic, is just by an individual, as far as I can tell, who just kind of had a passion to do this, was a big Office user, and put together these little posts. You know, maybe once or twice a week they come out. Just as an example, one of the articles is entitled Outlook Calendar Email Schedule. So when people email you and say, hey, what's your schedule look like for next week, rather than kind of hunting and pecking through your calendar and giving them this time and that time and that time, if you use Outlook, there is a button there that says email calendar, and very configurable. You can say, hey, show the free and busy schedule from Monday through Friday and send it to this person so they can see for themselves. Or if you want to put in some dummy text, and I think this has been a pick of mine in the past, it's actually an undocumented feature for adding lorem ipsum text to a Word document. You just put in equals, lorem, and then parentheses. And in those parentheses, you can say how many paragraphs and how many sentences in each paragraph. Just all kinds of little helpful hints like that. Finding all the emails in a conversation thread in Outlook. Freezing the header row in Excel. I almost have to Google that every time I do it. And here is just an easy way to quickly do that. And just a ton of articles that I think are really, really time savers. So it's called 1MinuteOfficeMagic.com, something to put in your RSS reader or visit occasionally if you are an Office Suite user.
Time savers in a very short amount of time. So win. How about that?
Short attention span, and you only got a minute over lunch or whatever to do a little browsing. That's a good place to browse.
Professional development in 1 minute or less.
Let's move on to one of our featured segments of the show for 2017, and that is ministry resources. And Sally, you took the reins today. What is the ministry resource?
Well, I'm titling it Desktop Publishing in the Cloud, Martin. And basically, this has been kind of a gap in my cloud-based ability to produce content. And I think churches and schools are always producing communication-type content, flyers and bulletin inserts and all kinds of things of that nature that in the past maybe you used Microsoft Publisher for, but now, you know, with this new age of using the cloud and apps in the cloud and collaborating and sharing in the cloud, all of that. What I've found is that you can use Google Slides for that. And the big deal is that you can change Google Slides to be proportioned either 8.5 by 11 or 11 by 8.5 so that it prints correctly on a typical letter size piece of paper. Here's an example of a Google slide that I've used to make a newsletter. So again, Google Slides are just a blank palette. Basically, you can put images and text wherever you want them. You're not constrained the way you are in a word processing document. So I set the dimensions to 8.5 by 11, and then I could design it for a mailing, use different font sizes, use blocks that have coloring in them, incorporate headers and three columns of text, add in imagery to the text, all kinds of capabilities, very simply, just a very simple process. And so that's really my ministry resource for the week, is that you can take your desktop publishing to the cloud. I know a lot of congregations and schools are using it for things like newsletters and bulletin inserts, and have had great success with it. So check out Google Slides, of all things, for doing desktop publishing.
Yeah, something that most everybody has access to. There's probably others out there. I think Lucid comes to mind, and that. But I think to get to a usable state, there's a fee for that. But yeah, like you said, there's been a gap there, especially for students on Chromebooks trying to figure out how to do a newsletter or some kind of formatted. Document or sure. Whatever it is that you want to call it. So Let's move on to our featured video for the week after Easter.
And this week we're going to feature Dawn Michelle Williams. She's a Wells pianist, and she has a video out of Hallelujah, her own arrangement of Hallelujah. And she's playing piano in the woods. It's quite a neat look to her video. She has some special thanks in her comments for the people that helped her get that piano out in the woods like that. But Hallelujah, very beautiful rendition, something that we all enjoy at Easter time for sure. And you'll enjoy Dawn's rendition of it as well.
It looks like it's very well done. Enjoy that. That's going to, I think, wrap it up for this week for episode 493. We'll be back next week with 494, and our good friend Rachel Feld will be wrapping up the season of co-hosting for us. We don't bring in the co-hosts over the summer. We give them a break, but she's going to come in and talk about technology. And throughout the course of the year, we've kind of been focusing on the NMC Horizon Report and picking an article or a component of that that's worth talking about. And next week we've selected the changing role of the teacher. Very interesting. Technology will do that, and educational technology certainly has an impact on almost every teacher. So you're going to want to tune in to hear Rachel's take on all that as well.
I think it'll be especially interesting given that she's going to be moving this summer to New Ulm herself to be a professor at MLC and have a big role in training teachers in educational technology.
Some of the stuff that you're used to having Jim Grunwald take. He's been on the show a number of times as well. So blessings on him as he leaves, and Rachel as she enters. That's exciting. Thank all of you for joining us. We're really happy that you decided to give us an hour of your time, and hopefully we've made good use of it and been good stewards of your time. Come back next week for show 494, and blessings until then. Bye-bye.